You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. As you know, on this program, we talk about all things law enforcement, and we do not shy away from controversial subjects. And today, I think we're going to be talking about just that. Today, this show is going to be completely on one topic, and that is the persecution and prosecution of law enforcement officers taking place throughout this country. There is an incredible increase in the persecution and prosecution of American law enforcement officers when they are involved in officer-involved shootings. Generally speaking, when it is something involving a difference in the races, that is, that there is a white police officer, generally speaking, and a black suspect. Now, we have seen politically motivated prosecutions taking place at an incredible rate. Now, these are not necessarily racially motivated. When I talk about racially motivated, I don't mean that the officers the prosecutions are based on the officer's race. However, there seems to be a pattern, and the pattern is that when a white police officer is involved in an officer-involved shooting with a black suspect, whether or not the suspect is armed, it doesn't seem to matter any longer. You know, it used to be the unarmed black suspect being shot by the racist white police officer was the rallying cry of Black Lives Matter and George Soros-funded organizations that call themselves social justice groups. However, it doesn't have to be racially motivated for prosecutions to take place. That is, that it doesn't have to be a black suspect. It could be a white suspect, too. For instance, now I'm going to just talk about some very high profile that have happened very recently. Police officer Hoppy Hopkins, he was a very well-known officer. He was on the television show Southern Justice, and he was involved in an officer-involved shooting. The suspect was armed. Now, this was a white suspect, and Hoppy Hopkins was white also. This was in a small community, Ashe County in North Carolina. The suspect was drunk. He was armed with a rifle. He was non-compliant with the officers. He drove his vehicle towards the officers. He was attempting to get to the rifle, and Officer Hopkins shot him, and he killed him. He was investigated by the authorities there. Finding was that he was justified in that shooting. Years later, a new prosecutor comes in who happens to be a friend of the family. You heard me right. A friend of the family suddenly went and got an indictment against Officer Hopkins, who is by now living in a different state, working for a different police agency. He didn't even know it. He didn't even know that this was happening. And he was arrested. He was extradited. His life was turned upside down. And then when the trial happened, guess what? He was found not guilty very quickly. And the sheriff and the district attorney, there was a brand new sheriff that took over, worked with the district attorney to get him indicted. Well, he wound up going to jail for and getting terminated, thrown out of office for illegalities. So that's one. Then it was completely politically motivated. Now we have a very new shooting that took place in April of this year. Huntsville police officer William Darby. Now William Darby responds to a possible suicidal person armed with a gun. When officers arrived, 49-year-old Jeffrey Lewis Parker was in possession of a firearm and suicidal. Officer Darby gave him multiple commands to drop the weapon, and when he raised it, Officer Darby shot and killed him. Now, he was also investigated. The investigating authorities cleared him of any wrongdoing. And then what happens? A district attorney, and the suspect was black, and the officer was white. He only had 2 years on the job. And shockingly, no one expected this. The district attorney goes and gets an indictment against him and arrests him for murder. It is absolutely incredible. Now, in something that I have rarely seen, in fact, I've never seen it, the police agency and the chief and the mayor have come out in support of the officer. Not only have they come out on television and said, we don't believe that he's guilty of anything, but they are paying him still, and they are providing him with an attorney. This is something I have never seen. But both the mayor and the chief have come out and said he didn't murder anybody. What he did was justifiable. Now, but it doesn't matter, though. This officer's life is now turned upside down. He is facing a prison sentence. And that you never know with these politically motivated type of prosecutions. This officer could go to prison. And we're talking about an armed suspect, a guy who was suicidal, a man who was clearly a threat. It doesn't seem to matter anymore that when a district attorney has a political agenda, they don't care about the legalities. They don't care about how an officer is trained. They don't care about if it is the right thing or not. If they get their agenda out and they can garner some votes, they are willing to do anything. And that seems to be what is happening all over the country. Now we're looking at another shooting which has recently taken place. And this one is in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey. This police officer has also been arrested for murder. This individual who he shot was going crazy. Police had responded to a report that this individual was jumping on cars as they're driving by him, and this police officer, a young police officer, gets there. And as he pulls up, the suspect jumps on his vehicle. The officer goes to try and take him into custody, and the individual is maniacal and charges him, screaming at him. The officer shoots and kills him. Well, it turns out when they did the autopsy, he had every possible drug that he could have ingested. He had heroin. He had all kinds of other dope. And the officer was clearly in fear for his life. That is the threshold. If a reasonable officer can articulate that he is in reasonable fear for his life or serious bodily injury, he has the right to use deadly force. That doesn't seem to make a difference in politically motivated prosecutions. Now, this was not a black suspect. This was a Hispanic suspect. And once again, this officer who felt in fear for his life did what he felt he needed to do. Now, what threshold needs to be done here? This is insane. And what we're seeing here is this is happening over and over and over again. Take the case of Officer Shockley in St. Louis. This is another insane case. A white police officer fatally shoots a black man who is armed with a gun, who flees from him, tries to run him over, goes for a gun. The officer shoots him. He's got a bunch of dope on him. He's a dope dealer. And he gets cleared of all of the shooting in the normal course of the investigation. Well, what happens? A new district attorney takes over. And 4 years later, issues a warrant for his arrest for murder based on allegedly new information. Well, turns out there is no new information. A white white cop, black suspect, prosecutor that wants to clearly get some political points. And what do? They sacrifice this officer. They literally track him down at his new residence out of state. A SWAT team arrests him, puts him on trial for murder, and the judge throws it out as soon as the trial ends because there was no new evidence. It was a lie. Now, what I'm really watching is this officer is now suing. He's suing for false arrest. He's suing everybody involved in this, and this is going to be something very, very interesting to watch. But this is what's happening across the country. Officers are being persecuted. Officers are being prosecuted for politically motivated reasons. This is a chilling effect on law enforcement, and it is part of the war on cops. For those of you who are involved in investigative work, there is an amazing software that you've got to take a look at from Blue Light LLC. And Blue Light is a company owned by a retired Special Forces Sergeant Major. He is a strong supporter of law enforcement. And this software is amazing. It is incredible for conspiracy investigations, narcotics investigations, homicide. It's called Analyst Notebook. And it's a product that has been used very, very successfully in bringing down a lot of bad guys. The reason the Special Forces Sergeant Major got involved in it is because he used to use it in the Middle East for discovering IED, improvised explosive devices, originators, and their networks. But it's great for civilian police work. So check it out, Blue Light LLC, it's Analyst Notebook, and it is an amazing product. Check it out. If you're a police officer or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it, and this is really good stuff. You don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And it's only available at StinkyVest.com. Go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com. See their products, and it is worthwhile.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a retired law enforcement officer and the author of a brand new book that is coming out called Outside the Wire. Now, my guest today is J.T. Taman. J.T. is the co-author, along with David Shearman, of the Outside the Wire in Blue book. And it's a very interesting book, but it's very different than what you would probably expect from law enforcement. And J.T., thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thanks, Randy. I really appreciate you having me on for your listeners today.
You know, so I'm going to just read to my listeners a brief description of the book, because it's really a fascinating subject. It dramatically reveals the highly successful but little-known Department of Defense civilian law enforcement program born out of the 2006 campaign against the insurgency in Fallujah, Iraq. During the struggle, U.S. Army and Marine Corps leaders recognized that contemporary tactics and strategies were ineffective against insurgency that acted more like thugs and criminals than a regular fighting force. The question that plagued these leaders was who within their arsenal of warriors understood the mindset of criminals. The solution was not found within the DOD, but it was found in their brothers in blue, the American police officer. That is a love that description of that book, and you were one of those officers.
Yeah, that's correct. Myself and Dave Shearman, the co-author of the book, were both deployed. Myself for two tours there, and Dave for one tour in Afghanistan.
Let's talk about, before we go into that, let's talk about your history of policing. Where did you serve, and for how many years?
Well, let's go back in time, because I'm an old school guy. So we got to go back to the early 80s, of course. I started my law enforcement career right out of graduate school with the St. Petersburg Police Department down in Tampa Bay. I spent several years there, did a whole host of jobs with the police department, and left there in 1987 as a SWAT sergeant to take an appointment as a special agent with U.S. Customs, their Office of Investigations. Which I did, and I had a wonderful career. I did a lot of different things with them, undercover operations, functioned as group supervisors, a resident agent, did some time in foreign operations over in Europe as a deputy attaché. And then, of course, after the towers came down, there was no longer any U.S. Customs Service. It rolled into the Department of Homeland Security. So when I returned back to the United States in 2004, I actually went into the gang business now as a part of Department of Homeland Security, and ran a violent transnational gang group for a long period of time, which was outstanding. It's probably the closest you can get being a federal agent to be able to be back on the street working with the real cops again. So I really enjoyed that. But in 2007, I decided to go back into the foreign operations, and as a part of a joint interagency organization that was run out of Central Command in MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa. I went back to Iraq as part of that cell, which was called the Iraq Threat Finance Cell. And in Iraq, we were working Al-Qaeda financing nodes. And actually, that's where I actually learned about the LEP program to begin with from actually a mentor of mine, a DEA agent, who was assigned to the Marine Corps there.
Well, that's a storied career in and of itself. And then, so tell us a little bit about, because many law enforcement officers who are listening to this and those who are my listeners are unaware that this program ever even existed. Talk about that for just a little bit.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this program is it was considered way outside the box for Big Army. Very controversial in that again, you already explained that in the fight leading up to the latter part of 2005, 2006, many of the insurgents that were being picked up on the battlefield and then subjected to military interrogation, what they were finding out is these people were not, in fact, ideological true believers, as I like to refer to it. They were opportunistic criminals who were actually engaging in the IED effort against us for basically money, which and the more interviews they did, the more it became apparent to them that what they were dealing with was criminal organizations and not really a true fighting force like our forces are used to dealing with. So at the time, the Joint Improvised Explosive Defeat Organization, known as JIADO, convened a huge conference, and they had a whole bunch of people in there with brains a lot bigger than mine, and spent several days going over the problem and solutions to it. And when the doors opened up, the determination was, hey, we need some real cops on the battlefield.
And so they developed this program. So when you're talking about this program, LEP, it's called, correct? How did they recruit people to join?
It started, of course, with a what they would refer to as a concept of operations class, which consisted of like 15 guys to start with that went to Iraq. And from that proof of concept, when the military quickly learned that these cops had a great deal to offer to the fight, then recruiting was primarily done through word of mouth, through, you know, the law enforcement ranks across the country. You know, I know a guy, you know, who is a great homicide detective. I know a guy who, you know, specializes in narcotics. So it was primarily passed in that nature. And then, of course, there was two levels of LEP. So there was what they call a LEP 1 and a LEP 2. And a LEP 1, a lot of those guys were, like myself, they were federal agents because they possessed a top secret security clearance. And then a LEP 2 had a secret security clearance. And then how the program was set up is they had LEPs assigned in pairs all the way from core level down to actually company level. So we had guys advising generals in the headshed, so to speak. And then we had guys all the way down who were posted with captains of a small company at a small combat outpost. So that's basically how the organization was set up. And that's basically how they recruited.
How were you recruited?
Actually, I was called. I learned about the program from an agent, Richie Crawford, who was one of my mentors when I was a young agent, because we used to work a lot with the Drug Enforcement Administration. And like I said, I ran into him. He's a old Vietnam era Marine, was a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps in Vietnam, lived through it. And he was actually in the first class, the proof of concept class, assigned to the Marines during the Fallujah, actually right after the Fallujah fight. And I was over there doing some interrogations down at the base in Fallujah, and actually ran into him, found out about it. And then after I retired, I got a call from another DEA guy and said, hey, I understand you ran into Richie. Are you interested, you know, in you know, going downrange? And so I picked up the phone, called him, and that's where I ended up.
So, okay, what age did you retire?
I retired at 50.
Okay, so now you're 50 years old. You've already done more than 20 years as a law enforcement officer, and now it's time to go to Iraq. Is that what army you're in?
Yeah, that's exactly what you're in. I actually had 27 years of law enforcement experience in when I stepped down onto the tarmac in Afghanistan. And mine is kind of an interesting story in that I was only in country probably 2 months when we went out on a operation with some Afghan commandos to arrest, or what we would call over there capture or kill, two Taliban who had assassinated two local police officers in an attempt to influence the local village people not to participate in their rule of law. Coming off that target, we got ambushed, and I got severely wounded. So I ended up back in the States for several months in the hospital and rehab. And then after that, as soon as I rehabbed back, then I got recruited again to go back, and then I did two tours after that.
Wow. So you got seriously injured, and then you decided you were going back for more.
Yep. That's pretty much it. And while I was in the hospital, you talk about the recruitment process. While I was in the hospital, I actually had several people come to visit me, policemen and agents, and actually recruited them from my hospital bed. Now wrap your mind around that one. Who in your right mind is going to look at me in that hospital, because I was really messed up, and say, you know what, I'm going to sign up for some of this. But you know what, the guys did.
How were you injured?
I took a course in the ambush, which is typical in Afghanistan. When they initiate what they call a complex ambush, they always initiate it with IEDs. So I took a IED strike directly beneath my seat in my Humvee, about a foot under my butt.
Oh,
and it actually blew me, if you can believe this, blew me through the armored top of the Humvee right behind the gunner's turret. And it actually broke my neck, of course. The impact with the roof broke my neck. I had a burst fracture to my C1, which is about 85% of the time fatal, or results in complete paralysis. Broke my back, crushed both my legs. Shrapnel through my lower body. You kind of get the picture.
How the hell do you survive it? Secondly, you got to be one tough son of a bitch to take all that and then go back. That's all I can say.
Well, I mean, I think, a lot of your listeners obviously are police officers, and I think they understand that you have to come back. I mean, you have to win that battle. I lost the battle on that day, but I was going to win the war. And when I stepped down 7 months and 2 weeks later on the ground in Afghanistan, I won. So that's pretty much all I can say about that.
That in and of itself is an incredible story. So your talk about your co-author just for a moment, Dave Sherman. What was his story as far as his getting recruited and what he did?
Well, Dave, interesting story with Dave. Dave is a former LAPD. A lot of respect from that. Incredible, tough job. He was one of the plank holders, if you will, for the crash units in LA, which were their first gang units. Incredible amount of experience with that. Dave, when he left LA, he did some other jobs overseas. He did an incredible job that he talks about in the book in Pakistan, leading up to the actually transforming Pakistan into the resupply mode for the war itself. Dave did a lot of the groundwork there, actually undercover in Pakistan. Very, very interesting individual. Very fortunate to have him as a co-author. And actually, we had met in Afghanistan because part of the program, the LEP program, we had 13 undercover teams in Afghanistan, which totally blows people's minds. And when I say undercover teams, they were comprised of 15 to 20 Afghans, and they had two police officer, American police officer mentors with them. And the idea was, it was kind of set up like the Green Beret sets up their A-teams. And the idea was to teach these Afghans tradecrafting in American style policing, how to conduct surveillance, how to do undercover deals, how to do buy and bust. So Dave ran one of those teams for me in Afghanistan, and that's how we really got to know each other.
That's amazing. He did another amazing career, and then decided that he needed the adventure of going to Afghanistan. So let's talk about the book. First of all, what was it? The subject is amazing. How did you get involved in deciding to write this book?
Very, very interesting. And this is kind of how it went down. In 2015, around the time that the Police Officer Memorial Week is, I think it's around May, I believe. 2015.
Right.
Dave is a writer who writes a weekly column for the Leavenworth Times. And I got a email one morning from a retired Houston cop who was also with us in Afghanistan. He said, "Hey, JT, I just read this article online from the Leavenworth Times. You got to read it. Dave wrote it." So I went in and pulled it up, and Dave had written an article about me in honor of Police Memorial Week, entitled "An American Hero." And wow. I read through it, and I was so humbled by what he wrote. You know, I went to ground, I found his number, I called him up, and of course we reminisced about, you know, the guys that were killed in action over there. That's, you know, always the first subject to talk about. And afterwards, as cops do, we started talking about the current state of affairs in, you know, American law enforcement. And at this particular time, we were just coming off the Baltimore riots, and there was a seamless 24/7 news cycle, of which was very negative towards police. And as we were talking, we're like, you know, wouldn't it be great if somebody, you know, somebody could tell the left story, you know, of the true sacrifice and the true heart and soul of the American police officers, because that's what these guys represented who went there for America. Wouldn't it be great if somebody told that? And of course, you know, we ended the conversation by, of course, promising we'll get together for lunch when we, you know, we probably knew we wouldn't. And within 30 minutes, we were both back on the phone, and we said, hey, why don't we do it? Why don't we tell this story? It's a great story. So that's kind of how it came into being.
Well, you know, that brings up a question. So how many law enforcement officers were involved in that program? And is it still going on?
Well, yeah, it's still going on. I don't want to tell you the number, but it's greatly, it's probably only about 10-20% of what it was at its height. When I arrived in Iraq and took over as the operations chief for it, there was approximately 220 LEPs in Afghanistan, and at the time there was about 140 in Iraq. So at any given time, those were kind of the numbers, and then of course they had the close out of Iraq, and a lot of those guys shifted into Afghanistan. But the unique thing about this program and about the book particularly, because the book is told from a very wide span of law enforcement officers and agencies. The book is told by, actually, you've got the viewpoint of city cops, you've got deputy sheriffs, you've got state troopers, you have FBI agents, ATF agents, Border Patrol agents, and, you know, even the recently controversial ICE agents. So the book reflects stories from a very wide spectrum of the law enforcement community. And not only that, it covers the whole United States, because these guys were from everywhere, from Chicago to L.A. to Houston to Atlanta to New York City to Tampa, you name it. So the book, the perspective the book gives is a large perspective from a big group of cops, you know, from various organizations, which really makes it unique.
Yeah, absolutely unique. So one of the questions I have is how many, so, you know, you're working for the government in this capacity. How many law enforcement officers gave their lives in the line of duty during that service?
We had five LEPs killed in action. I'm going to break it down for you. Three of the LEPs were actually assassinated by Afghan police officers, if you can believe that.
Oh, boy.
The military refers to it as insider threat. And of course, in the book, I write, I dedicate a couple chapters to those guys. And actually, I just refer to it as murder, because that's just what it was. It was just straight up murder. And then we had two guys who were actually killed during combat actions. So, yeah, we had a total of five killed. We had a countless number wounded, probably a dozen wounded. And actually, to back up a little bit, when we were having these conversations, I had just returned from Washington, D.C., because the Department of Defense had actually honored the five KIAs and all the guys who were wounded by giving them all the Defensive Freedom Medals. So we had just all had a big ceremony at the Pentagon and the Hall of Heroes, where everybody was awarded these medals, which was pretty special. That we talked about it in the book as
well. Yeah, that is special. Just out of curiosity, because of the service, were their names allowed to be carved into the monument in Washington at the law enforcement memorial?
Actually, they are not, and that's something that we're investigating now about how we go about and see if we can get some political support behind putting their names on the wall. They should be on that wall. It's only right to have them on that wall. But the current process to get them on the wall of course, requires, you know, an on-duty death from an existing domestic agency. So we're going to have to obviously get some political support behind us to get this accomplished, but we're definitely pursuing that.
I think that that would be an appropriate, I think that would be an appropriate honor for them. If I can help in any way to do that, I will do that. I do have some very good relationships with the Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, which is the guardian of that memorial. And it's a it is definitely an honor that I think should be bestowed upon the men and women who made that sacrifice.
Absolutely.
When you decided to do the book, how long did it take you to actually write it?
Well, we actually started writing the book, I think, around January or February. Several months later, we actually sat down and started writing stories, and the stories really wrote themselves. And it took us probably 8-10 months to actually put the stories down on paper. And then, of course, you know, for your listeners who don't know about the book process, it's rather extensive, and finding a publisher and going through all that. So it really only took us a year to write it, but it took us, you know, from then till now to actually get it published. So.
And I mean, getting a book, first of all, writing a book is incredibly tedious it's a hell of a project. I mean, it is totally life consuming. And then of course there's all the business end of it, and finding a publisher and getting it out there. Who wound up publishing the book?
A small publishing company called Titletown, out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, who are very, very law enforcement friendly. Last year they published Blue Lives Matter, that was written by that DA in LA. So they're very law enforcement friendly, and they're trying to open up, you know, that to create a, if you will, a stable of law enforcement writers, because they're very interested in that topic. So that's the company, the actual publishing house that handled us.
And
very,
it's
good people.
And it's only fair that I tell my listeners that they are my publisher as well.
They published a book of yours as well too.
Correct,
yeah. So
correct. My last book, The Power of Legacy, was published by Titletown as well, and you're right. They're a very law enforcement friendly group over there, and they're a great publisher. So let me ask you this: is the book available now?
Actually, the book is available on our website. However, the actual hardback, the premium hardback books, will not be available for another 4 to 5 weeks before they get back from the printer. But it is available in softback on Amazon or with Titletown. And we also have our own publication website, www.outsidethewireandblue.com, where you can actually go on and order a signed hardback. And if you do that, we actually then at the same time send you the ebook. So you can actually, you know, download it and read it now while you're waiting for the signed book to come back.
So it's on Amazon, soft cover. On your website, outsidethewire.com,
and also Titletown.
And Titletown. So it's available in several different places, in electronic form and also in soft cover. But the hard book will be out in about 5 weeks or so. When you author a book, it is an all-consuming experience. And tell me what you hope to accomplish, because it's a sense of mission, just like, you know, just like taking on a new assignment. What do you hope to accomplish with this book?
I think we had, me personally, only speaking for myself, I had a couple of primary goals. One, of course, was to tell these truly incredible stories about these guys who were dressed like, equipped like, ate with, slept with, cried with, laughed with, and fought and died with the soldiers. That was, to tell their stories was my number one goal. The secondary issue was to write the book in a way, and we wrote this book kind of unconventional, in that we continued to come back to the streets in the United States to reinforce the lessons we had learned, which helped us on the battlefield, which is kind of unique in that we flash back to real police events in the United States that happened to us that we learned valuable lessons from. with regard to, you know, leadership and courage and, you know, all the things that go into being, you know, a policeman. And what I was attempting to do is hopefully create a book that would be useful to the young police officers who were just starting off their careers, to give them some hard lessons learned. And I went into a lot of things very personal to me that happened to me on the streets, and with the hope that in reading this, it would help the young police officer and maybe in some way set the bar a little higher for them. So those were my two primary missions in writing the book.
Well, and those are very noble missions. You know, we've seen in your decades in law enforcement, we've seen the changes that have taken place in the profession. And we've seen a lot of political manipulation. When you're out on the street, that's the time for the politics to end and the policing to begin. And that's a lesson Absolutely. That really needs to be taught to the line officers today.
Yeah, and the leadership part of it is huge. And let me give you a quick story. When I came back from, I went from Afghanistan, and they sent me to Germany to the training school over there called the JMRC, which is a Joint Military Readiness Training Center, which trains the NATO troops and the police from the NATO countries going to Afghanistan. It's their last cycle of training to do the advisory missions. And when I came back from there to Houston, I kind of wanted to get a feel of what it was like on the street. So I decided that I would, you know, go through another police academy and go back out on the street in uniform. And in so doing, I went through a local academy with a bunch of 20-year-old kids. And and that was an experience for me at 58 years old. But there was a chief from a small kind of bedroom community municipality here in Houston who came in to teach a topic. And before he started teaching the topic, he got in front of the class. He said, "Hey, I want you guys to tell me what you think the biggest threat to law enforcement today is." And of course, you know, all the young kids, you know, everybody hates us, this and that is dangerous. And this gentleman, who is a relatively young guy, mid-40s, was a prior intelligence officer, naval intelligence officer. And he stood up in front of the class and he goes, "I'm going to submit to you that the biggest threat today to law enforcement is a lack of leadership within the agencies."
Amen.
And
I sat there thinking,
this guy has hit it right on the head. You know, so there you go. That's why I hit the leadership principles so heavy in the book and gave some, you know, very personal experiences to kind of drive that home to the young kids.
Well, that's a chief that I'd like to have on this show because he hit it right on the head. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time. What is, first of all, how does someone, if they're interested now, because we have a lot of law enforcement listeners here, if they wanted to get involved and apply for LEP, how would they do that?
They could actually, I think they can go online. And if they Google Engility Corporation, I think that Engility is currently the medium by which you can get into the program. If they Google that, they'll get all the information they need.
Great. That's good to hear. So, once again, the book is available. It is called Outside the Wire. Outside the Wire in Blue.
Correct.
And it's written by you and by David Shearman. And it is available on Amazon.com. It is available at OutsideTheWire.com. And it also
OutsideTheWireInBlue.com.
OutsideTheWireInBlue.com. And also at Titletown at their website as well.
Yeah, correct.
Well, you and I could talk for hours about some of
we could. We really could.
Incredible stories
no doubt.
That must have come out. But, you know, your commitment, JT, to the law enforcement community, to your country, and the sacrifices that you have made, I urge that all my listeners grab this book. It's an incredible read. I've gone through it, and it is something that I think will inspire not just law enforcement officers, but those who support them as well. So I want to thank you again for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Well, I want to thank you for having this forum where you can get information out to the policemen, you know, your listening audience. It's a huge benefit to all the cops out there. So thank you for what you do.
Those of you who have followed me for any length of time know that in addition to being a 33-year law enforcement officer, I'm also an author. I've written 4 books, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, A Cop's Life, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and my latest book, which was actually just released only a couple weeks ago, is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. It's a much different book than what I've written before, but it is truly an inspirational book because I had traveled the country talking to people who have done amazing things with their lives, people like Frank Shankwitz, who, when he was an Arizona State Trooper, created the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Gary Sinise, who's done amazing things for military and law enforcement, and a number of people, some names you know, some names you don't, but this book is full of inspiration. Changed my life doing this book. Now, here's something I'm going to share with you. You know, I have a lot of Facebook followers, you know, more than 25,000 of them. But Facebook is not allowing me to share the message of my book. I think they call it shadow banning, and it's very, very disturbing. So I'm going to ask your help. First of all, I would love for you to go to Amazon.com. It's available on Kindle. It's available on audiobook, and of course in hardcover and softcover. I would love for you to pick up a copy of this book, share it with your children, because it is full of inspiration about how everyone can become a personal hero. But I'd also ask you to share this information with your friends on Facebook and other social media, because I'm fighting an uphill battle. Shadow banning is a real thing. I go to share it with my followers, and it keeps on getting unapproved, saying it's too political. There's nothing political about this book. It's about good people. I'd ask for you to share this message. I need your help to get this message out, because this book can change the world. When you talk about becoming a personal hero, you change the life of one person. You add to that person's life, and you change the world. So if you would, check me out on Amazon.com. All my books are available there. But the Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And I appreciate your support. To my active duty law enforcement listeners, if you are looking for extra work, that is the same type of work that you're doing, working traffic assignments, security assignments through your department, there is a company you need to know about, Law Enforcement Specialists. Law Enforcement Specialists is in most states in this country, and they get you extra work. They work with your agency to do it. It's all covered by your department's policies, and they are basically your place to go to work extra duty assignments. You know, I know that it's sometimes difficult to get those assignments due to the scheduling difficulties and all, but check with them. Law Enforcement Specialists, go to offdutypoliceofficers.com, offdutypoliceofficers.com, or give them a call, 623-223-9553, and they are called Law Enforcement Specialists. They will get you some work assignments, because let's face it, we all need to take a vacation now and then. You got to pay for it. Give them a call, offdutypoliceofficers.com at 623-223-9553.
I'd like you to meet Lieutenant Randy Sutton, law enforcement veteran, author, podcast, and talk radio host of Blue Lives Radio on America Out Loud. Randy, whether it be a public event turned tragic or natural disaster, law enforcement is steadfast when it comes to public safety, even in spite of media criticisms. Why?
because the men and women of law enforcement are dedicated to what they do. It's about service. It's about community.
Lieutenant Sutton, America Out Loud has a spotlight on law enforcement and our military. How has this impacted you in getting your message out on Blue Lives Radio?
Oh, it's been a life-changing experience, Malcolm. I mean, the opportunity to tell the truth, as we call it, the out loud truth, has been a life-changing opportunity for me. You know, as my role changed from being an active duty police officer to being an advocate for law enforcement, America Out Loud has provided a forum for that. And it's touched literally hundreds of thousands of lives, and it has deep meaning to them. It brings them the truth about law enforcement, and it helps to bridge some of those gaps that are taking place within our culture.
Our goal is simple: to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. It's to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. America Out Loud, welcome to the new era in communications.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, this week I have three names to read. The first is Deputy Sheriff Mark Cox of the Real County Sheriff's Office in Texas. Deputy Sheriff Mark Cox suffered a fatal heart attack while conducting canine training at the 600 block of County Road 202 in Liberty Hill, Texas. Deputy Cox was a U.S. Navy veteran and had served with the Real County Sheriff's Office for 3 years. He had previously served with the Edwards County Sheriff's Office for 5 years. He had also previously served with a law enforcement agency in Florida. He is survived by his wife and two children. Deputy Sheriff Mark A. Cox, Real County Sheriff's Office, Texas. End of Watch, Tuesday, September 25th, 2018. The second and third officers that I'm going to read their names were both murdered in the same incident. The first is Corporal Zach Mauck of the Brookhaven Police Department, Mississippi. Corporal Zach Mauck and Patrolman James White were shot and killed in front of a home at 630 North 6th Street while responding to reports of shots fired shortly before 5 a.m. Both officers encountered a male subject in front of the home and exchanged shots. The subject and both officers were struck during the shooting. Patrolman White and Corporal Mauck were both transported to King's Daughters Medical Center, where they succumbed to their wounds. The subject was taken into custody and taken to a separate hospital. Two additional subjects were taken into custody as part of the investigation. Corporal Zach Mauck and Patrolman James White of the Brookhaven Police Department in Mississippi. End of Watch, Saturday, September 29th, 2018. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for joining me this week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, on the America Out Loud Network. Each week I try to bring you the police point of view with stories and articles and also with great interviews. I want to thank not only you for listening, but also those that make this possible, and that is Blue Light LLC, who does amazing intelligence software for law enforcement, and my friends over at the Law Enforcement Specialists. And I also want to just remind you about the book, The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. I would love for you to check it out on Amazon.com, read it, and I'd love for you to review it as well. So check it out, The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People on Amazon.com. I'll see you next week.